Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I'm Fred Williams, host of Real Science Radio.
And I'm Ryan Williams, creation speaker and software engineer.
You don't sound like Doug McBurney.
Nope. Doug is on R&R this week, so I'm filling in so we can do the Creation Magazine.
Awesome. So with all the work Doug's put into Real Science Radio these last several months, I think he's due for some R&R. So R&R from RSR. And for those of you who missed the recent announcement, Doug is now the official co-host with yours truly on Real Science Radio. But Ryan, you still plan to sit in whenever a new Creation Magazine comes out.
Yep. I'll be slowly chipping away at Doug's spot, so he's got to watch his back.
So I don't know if you heard, Ryan, but this is Telethon month. And so we are trying to raise $30,000 to help us stay on the air so that we can share with the world not just true science, but the ultimate truth of Jesus Christ and the gospel. So however you can help out, just go to the website at rsr.org and you'll see a big banner about the telethon. Just click on the banner and you'll be taken to a page that gives you different options of how you can help us.
Yeah, but I just clicked on it and looking at that page now, it's right at the top, nice and easy to see. So hopefully it's not too difficult to find.
Yeah, either with your mobile device or if you're on a laptop or a desktop, you've got your is that a Samsung phone there you got, Ryan?
Yep, nice and easy.
Yep, and you can do things like a one-time donation, a monthly donation, or better yet, become a sponsor of a show. That's pretty cool, and if you want, we'll even mention your name or your business when we announce you as a sponsor of the show. There's great materials. There's things like Miracles in the Bible. What a wonderful MP3 that is. There's the MP3 on authority, the authority of the Bible. I think my personal favorite, and they're all great, but I just love the Tree of the Knowledge of Good and Evil. In fact, I've got that in my car right now. I'm listening to the last chapter of that. There's six sections in that really compelling Bible study. I think that Bible study would be great even for a non-believer, just to help them understand things like, you know, why there's a hell, for example, and why are people sent there for all eternity? You know, people think how rough that is, but boy, this is such a good Bible study, and you can get answers like that and other answers about, you know, like how the tree of the knowledge of good and evil is symbolic of the law, and there's really cool stories in the Bible that relate to that. It's fantastic. So, Ryan, we're going to do a Creation Magazine, but before we do that, you know, this DART thing has been in the news. So this is NASA. What they did was they crashed a spacecraft called the DART into an asteroid, and it had a bigger change than they expected. This thing is called, by the way, the Double Asteroid Redirection Test, and I think they're probably doing it. They've been watching a lot of Hollywood movies, and they're worried about it.
Yeah, I was going to say, it sounds like they've seen a little bit too much sci-fi. Sounds like they're practicing in case they need to knock an asteroid off course that's going to destroy the Earth.
Yeah, it seems like every other year Hollywood comes out with a disaster movie with some asteroid hitting the planet. So, and we're going to spend more time talking about this in the future because we predict that they're going to find out that that thing is just a big rock pile. But anyways, I liked one of the comments in this article. It says, for the first time ever, humanity has changed the orbit of a planetary body.
And our producer Dom made a good point. It might be the second time in history that humans have, I guess, had relation to changing the orbit of a planetary body.
So what would that be then?
Be the global flood. When the flood happened, fountains of the Great Deep broke up, the Earth lost a lot of mass, and now we have 365 day years instead of 360 like it was before. So yeah. We had a role, indirect bad role.
Yeah,
in
it, exactly.
Instead of doing it on purpose.
Yeah, the hydroplate theory, and I think it's really cool. So if the Earth is shooting up all this material, a lot of it's achieving escape velocity and going up into, you know, into space and doing things like pummeling the moon and becoming comets and asteroids. Well, if you lose about 5% mass, just by physics, by the conservation of angular momentum, the Earth is going to spin faster. And so that would explain the 365-day year. And not only that, humanity would have changed slightly change the orbit of the moon. I mean, with that thing getting pummeled, if you consider the moon is not on a perfect 30-day cycle. It's on a, its cycle is 29.53 days. That's what the lunar month is. So the hydroplate theory would also explain that, because I don't think the moon would have been on a 29.53-day orbit in God's perfect creation when he was
God normally likes his round numbers. It doesn't sound quite right. But
yeah, it doesn't sound like a very good orbit, like God says at the end of the first chapter of Genesis when he was done creating the heavens and the earth. So anyways, we'll keep up to date on the DART mission and how it actually is going to help confirm some of the predictions of the hydroplate theory. So that's all fun stuff. Ryan, I think it's time to get into the Creation Magazine. Now, when I was looking at this, there was an article that really stuck out for me that I wanted to go ahead and start with, because it's, I just love the creatures that God creates. I mean, there's so many neat things. This thing's called a stargazer. It's a fish. Now, when you think of stargazer, when I first saw the title, I'm thinking, well, that thing sounds, you know, like really cool. Like it's going to look neat. It's kind of, I don't know.
Sounds nice. It sounds like a cute fish, maybe. Yeah. But no, that's, if you want to look this thing up, I wouldn't refer to it as cute. That's for sure.
Yeah. And the guy who wrote it is Joel Tay. Now, we met him, right?
Yep. At the Creation Conference.
Yeah, we were at the Creation CMI International, Creation Ministries International. They put out Creation Magazine, and you can go to their website at creation.com. But anyways, Joel Tay, he's the guy who wrote this article, and we actually, he sat at our table for one of the dinners when we were there. It was a 4-day conference roughly, but Joel and his wife, we talked to them and, you know, with his kids at the table, really nice guy. And he's written a fantastic article about this stargazer. I didn't know about this thing. I'm looking at the picture, Ryan, and like you said, this thing isn't the prettiest thing in the world.
Yeah, thing's it's not a looker, that's
it,
for sure.
It's super interesting, though, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I'd never heard of it either before reading this one. The reason they call it the stargazer, that was the first thing I want to know, is why are you calling a fish a stargazer? It's because it has these eyes on the top of its head, but on top of that, its eyes can protrude out of its head. So it'll sometimes bury itself under sand and debris at the bottom of the ocean, and then its eyes will protrude up out of its head and over the dirt, kind of like a periscope from a submarine or something like that. And then it's able to see its prey, which it, you know, that it's able to catch using a bunch of different tactics that we'll end up going into.
Yeah, so it's kind of a bug eyes kind of guy, right? And it, so what I thought was really cool, so you mentioned how it kind of lures other prey in, other little fish or whatever this thing wants to gobble up. What it'll do, it'll be kind of hiding under the substrate, and the magazine actually has a really cool picture of this thing doing that. It's so weird. You can see the sand around it, and you can make out the face just a little bit. But without knowing that it's there and knowing, you know, that this article is talking about it, I wouldn't have known if I'd seen that. But you can kind of make out its eyes. Well, here's what's really cool. It sticks out its little tongue up out of the dirt. And so it's like a little worm. And so that's its lure. So little fish come around and say, ooh, that thing looks tasty. And by the way, its eyes kind of shift too. And it kind of draws attention to things too, the little eyes shifting. So you got, just imagine in the dirt, if you can kind of see a little motion, maybe little eyes, and a little worm sticking out that's actually this guy's tongue.
Yep. But then, you know, what does it do once it, you know, has the fish, once the fish took the bait? Well, almost like a, you know, comic book superhero, it can shoot electricity out of its eyes. No joke. It don't technically come out of the eyes, but it's muscles behind the eye that produce electricity to stun the prey. So that's one of the ways it can get it. It electrocutes them with its eyes.
Yeah, so who would have known that? Wow, amazing. A fish that has kind of like a Marvel character. I don't know. I'm thinking like one of the Superman movies had a guy named Zog or something like that, or Zod. And he could shoot, you know, some kind of laser out of his eyes. So this guy can shoot out a spark.
Yep, it's 50 volts of electricity, which that's not enough to really do much damage to a human being. But when you've got a small fish, that'll really do something to it and probably, you know, if not kill it, stun it at the very least.
Yeah, and you know, voltage isn't really the thing anyways that does the damage. It's the current. You know, I used to have this shock can. and it had this interesting foreign label on it, so it draws your attention to it. And when you grabbed it, it actually had a really good kick to it, and it was like 10,000 volts. So you think, wow, 10,000 volts, that should kill somebody. Well, no, it's not the voltage that does it, it's the current. In fact, if you rub your feet on the floor and you create static, if I recall, that's something like between 1,000 and 10,000 volts. So it's really not the voltage that gets you, it's the current. By the way, Ryan, this reminds me of a story, and I'm almost positive at the time you were being circumcised and your grandmother was watching or cleaning our house.
Maybe you could leave that detail out.
You know, and circumcision itself is super interesting because it's done on the eighth day in the Bible. Well, the guy who delivered you, and I'm dovetailing now, but the guy who delivered you, he's a doctor, obviously, and he said that, you know, there's a reason for that eighth day. It's because it gives the vitamin K in your body, the vitamin K that your body naturally produces, to the point where after 8 days, your blood clotting is where it needs to be. So it's amazing in the Bible. Whenever the Bible talks about science, it's always accurate. That's why in the Bible it says wait 8 days before you circumcise. Well, anyways, and today they use a vitamin K shot so that they can do it sooner. But we're getting you circumcised, and your grandmother, who, bless her heart, she's actually with the Lord now. She passed away, I think it's been about a year, your grandmother, my wife's mother. She was cleaning the house while we were having you circumcised. And I'd put that can up above the cabinets. You know, there's an opening above our cabinets. Well, she was up there cleaning, and why women like to clean where you can't see, but they do. They like to do that. And she grabs that can, and she's so conscientious of not like breaking anything in our house. She grabs the can and then grabs it with her other hand to set it down gently. And this thing is, you know, spewing out to 10,000 volts. You know, again, it's the current. It's very low current. And we get home, and I see that can on the counter, and I'm like, uh-oh. And your grandmother's like, Fred, you know, I'm getting to where I don't appreciate your sense of humor. So anyways, I digress. So that thing has a lot of voltage, this stargazer fish, and it's interesting. Once it zaps its prey and it's ready to chow down, what does it do?
Yeah, so once it has its prey stunned, it has this suction feeder, basically like a big vacuum. So it just opens its big mouth really wide and sucks it right in, basically.
Yeah, has a huge mouth and it just gobbles that thing up. I mean,
kind of like a tractor beam.
Yeah,
sucked them right
in. That's true. Yep. So the thing also has some of its tentacles. Some species, the tentacles themselves are venomous. I know that like the lionfish is something popular in aquaria or saltwater aquariums, and those things can, you know, they can have a pretty potent sting to them. So anyways, then Joel Tay, you know, his articles are so awesome. He goes in and explains, you know, after the fall, of how slight changes can provide creatures like this stargazer the ability to have this defense.
Yeah, that was the part I really liked is, you know, he's talking about all this cool stuff that the fish has, and he could have just stopped there because that's kind of enough. Like, you know, there's a lot of different stuff that would have had to evolve. But then he goes into talking about how, well, you know, how does this stuff arise after the fall in a perfect world? Did God just create a bunch of new stuff randomly at the fall? Because that, you know, no, was never really mentioned in the Bible, even though it could be the case. But he, you know, makes pretty good arguments about how in a fallen world that was once perfect, how this stuff, it makes sense that it's there. It's not a surprise to us as creationists.
Yeah, and I think we've had a earlier Creation magazine we talked about where we covered like snake venom and how a lot of the ingredients in snake venom are actually good for you, but just slight changes make it harmful. So mm-hmm. You can just have a slight switch, say, that in the fall turns, you know, God flips a switch. And we know that everything is information. There's so much information, the way it plays into our world, that somehow God might have, like Bob would say, a pointer in the sky. And you know what I'm talking about, a pointer in software, you know, where you change a variable or what, and it points to another aspect of how something's going to work. Well, again, it would take just a minor change in the information to make something venomous, where before it was helpful and it was useful feature. So I thought it was cool that he covered that. And again, that's Joel Tay. The magazine is, again, Creation Volume, What volume do you have there, Ryan? It's 44.
Volume 44, number 4, issue 4.
Yeah, and again, if you don't get Creation Magazine, you should get it. It's our favorite magazine of all the creation organizations. It's so very well put together. I just love it. So, Ryan, I want to get to the next article. Now, I wanted to go back to a prior Creation Magazine because we weren't able to get to it. We've been doing so many great shows and different topics that have arisen. So I don't want everybody to think, hey, we're just going to skip volume 44, number 3. There were two really good stories in there that I wanted to get to from the focus section. And the first one is titled, Finches Sing to Their Eggs to Reprogram Their Babies. I mean, that is so cool. What is that all about?
Yeah, so this one's about how we basically know that in development, it's a lot of it's related to pre-programmed stuff in its genes, which is in and of itself really cool. But this article talks about how these finch eggs, the adult finches will sing to them, and then it will change parts of their development, which is pretty cool.
So basically it's saying that the singing or the music, the vibrations from the audio, it actually has an impact on its offspring.
Yep, yep.
It's like a programming, some kind of tweak to the programming. That is so cool. So, you know, this reminds me, Dr. Rob Carter, he was out at Young Earth. He was out at Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship, and you can go listen to his talk at youngearth.org and just go to the archive section. His talk was the high-tech cell, and he noted that the programming in the cell at this point has even astonished creationists. We're even surprised at the complexity and the level and the detail, and we're still learning. And it's amazing how evolutionists can think that somehow does this happen by random chance and selection? It can't. And I just, you know, as an engineer, whenever I'm witnessing to another engineer, I mean, the first thing I always go to is DNA and the programming in the DNA. How can you be a computer programmer, a software engineer, and look at the DNA in the human and think that that somehow happened by random changes? And yet all the programs you do and all the bugs that you're probably in the stage right now in the project at Micron, you're having to deal with bugs that come in based on work you and your team have already done. So they think that bugs happen and that creates new code. It's ridiculous. It really mm-hmm. is. And the DNA is so complex that, you know, you read it backwards and it does a different function. I mean, we could go on and on. We've talked about it before, but wow.
And now we're finding out that external changes can also have an effect, and even beyond just the, I guess, receiving member of the little group, the eggs, the mother birds somehow know to do this. They know to sing to their eggs so that they'll develop differently in a situation where that would be very advantageous. So
is it like maybe because impressive. Of weather or something that makes them decide whether or not they want to do the singing to kind of reprogram of how they're developing?
Yeah, they mention in one area of this article where when it's really hot, then this will happen, and the babies actually come out smaller than the ones that weren't exposed to the environmental variable, you could say. And that actually ends up helping these to like stay cooler during their life so they don't get as hot.
Wow, that's amazing. So the title of the next article is Human Brain Neurons Unique. Now, this one's really cool, too. And Ryan, what does this one have to say?
Yeah, so for this one, brain researchers at MIT, they compared neurons, which are the brain cells, of humans with 9 other mammals. So, and then they give a little bit of background to how neurons work, is they transmit these signals by opening and closing channels that allow different ions like potassium and sodium to be pumped in or out, and that requires energy. So they found that in the non-human creatures, the other mammals, they found a pretty close relationship between the size of the neurons and the density of the ion channels. So basically, the amount of ions going through, the more those are, the bigger the size of the neuron channel, basically, which kind of makes sense. But then they were surprised because humans were a lot different. Humans had a much lower density of these ion channels than what was expected based on the other creatures, which basically means that humans have a much higher energy efficiency because, remember, it takes energy to push these ions in and out.
Okay, so basically the human brain is completely unique, so we're not, another argument that we're not related to chimps. There's something that separates us. And if you think about the mind and the brain, it's kind of like the in-between, the medium between our soul, spirit, and our physical body, right? I mean, we've kind of talked about this on prior shows, how there's something outside. There's our consciousness that isn't just inside our brain. We're not just matter and energy. I mean, there are evolutionists try it. They want to believe that, and it just, the science doesn't support it. And there are even evolutionists out there who admit that there's something more here. There's something more. There's a consciousness that somehow is outside the body. We did a really cool show on where they did this experiment where they cut the brain in half. I mean, you think, well, that's weird. How can someone survive that? Well, they found out it was a very effective treatment for certain people who have a really severe form of epilepsy. And they found that this actually helps them out. And you would think if you're a materialist, the person's going to have a split personality. But it, as it turns out, when they did experiments, they found out that this person, there was somehow, there was still a connection between those two lobes, and it had to be something outside the brain. For example, they can understand concepts such as grammar, and not just, you know, specific numbers or whatever, whatever you're talking, whatever they're being tested against, they would understand concepts. It was so cool. And you can go back and find that show Daniel Hedrick and I did sometime last year. Just go to rsr.org and you'll find it in the archives. And we talked about this surgery, and it's called corpus callosotomy, that treated epilepsy patients where they severed one part of the lobe with the other lobe. It's so cool what that revealed about the information that God programs into our brains. So, Brian, that gets me back to this article. It also reminds me of another show, and that's the show on savants. And that was one of the better shows I thought we did before Bob passed. And so that show, I think, was maybe a couple years ago. And it was the savant show. So you can go to rsr.org/savant. And one of the savants that we talked about, Ryan, that you would know is Curry, right?
Yeah, Steph Curry. He's some of these athletes, it's almost the only way to explain some of the stuff they can do, because it even almost goes beyond just physical capabilities and elite athleticism, what some of these guys can do. Just being able to be like nearly 40-50% from three-pointer like Curry is, if you ever watch him play, it's remarkable what he can do. It's have to be something he's unlocked in his brain to be able to achieve what he's been able to achieve.
Yeah. So Bob came up with a definition for savant that we think should be in the Webster's Dictionary, and this is it. 1A, a person who can access some of the originally created extraordinary capabilities of the mind and the brain, which, because of sin, are now mostly latent, or 1B, a person with a physiological break in the barrier that formed after man's fall, that break opening partial access through the barricade designed to block access to our greatest intellectual potential. And, you know, Bob wrote this after the Savant show, and I think it's really apropos here. Speaking of lost original functionality, consider the tree of life and limb regeneration. So this came from Science Daily back in 2021. Scientists identify signaling underlying regeneration. Wow. So scientists say that we humans have an untapped ability to regenerate body parts as they make advances in understanding limb regeneration. So Bob goes on and he says, consider the discovery of differences in molecular signaling that promote regeneration in the axolotl, a highly regenerative salamander, while blocking it in the adult mouse. So here at Real Science Radio, Bob goes on, we surmise that this may relate to the reason for the fruit and the leaves on the tree of life, both in Eden and on the new earth. A researcher compared immune cells called macrophages in the axolotl, that is a hard word to say. You know, Google, Ryan, actually has a way to pronounce words, and it tells you whether or not you're wrong. So
yeah, that's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. For a show like this, where we have all these random animal names, like axolotl, to say, that's quite useful.
Yeah, you said that better than I did. So anyways, the axolotl, this salamander. So Bob goes on, a researcher compared immune cells called macrophages in the, Ryan,
Axolotl.
Thank you. To those in the mouse with the goal of identifying the quality in the...
Axolotl.
macrophages that promote regeneration. I knew there was a great reason other than just going through Creation Magazine to have you here, Ryan. So.
Guess if I'm the pronounce guy, I guess that's...
Yeah, the RSR's official pronouncer. So the research builds on earlier studies in which Godwin, this scientist, found that macrophages are critical to regeneration. When they are depleted, the axolotl, did I do okay on that one?
I think so. Okay. Close enough.
Forms a scar instead of regenerating, just like mammals. The recent research found that although macrophage signaling in the axolotl.
Axolotl.
Okay, thank you. The axolotl. And in the mouse were similar when the organisms were exposed to pathogens such as bacteria, funguses, and viruses. When it came to exposure to injury, it was a different story. The macrophage signaling in the axolotl promoted the growth of new tissue, while that in the mouse promoted scarring. So, to Bob's point, he goes on about this whole tree of life. Just like the originally created extraordinary capabilities of the mind and the brain that Savant syndrome gives access to, limb regeneration may similarly be an originally created, now latent capability that may be more recoverable in animals than in humans.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. Imagine if we were able to unlock that, all the various problems it would solve. Imagine just... seeing a person, you know, like maybe somebody who, like an amputee, they got like a little nub growing back, and you can see it as it's in the process of growing, be kind of like something out of a movie.
Yeah, wow. So Bob wraps up this particular article. He says, for the super nutrients in the leaves of the fruit of the tree of life could bring about recovery from severe biological damage. So God may have made us as human beings in a way that repair for the major bodily harm requires both the proper internal molecular functioning and dietary supplements available only from the tree of life. So that's really cool, Ryan. I want that vitamin. They got all kinds
Same
of different
here.
Men's vitamins and women's vitamins, and they're all, you know, super nutrients. That's the one I want. So, Brian, what's the next article we have in the latest Creation Magazine?
Yeah, so now we're moving over to the newest one, Volume 44, Number 4. And kind of there's a one in the focus section that actually works pretty well with what we were just talking about. And it's called Junk DNA Mutations Linked to Cancer. So basically, it's been long known that there's a non-coding portion of the genome that is regarded as quote-unquote junk DNA. But it's basically an area that we don't know what it does yet. But it clearly does something, because this article talks about how if you get a mutation in your junk DNA, then a lot of times it can lead to cancer, which if that DNA is really junk and completely worthless, then why are you getting cancer once you get a mutation in it? It's clearly necessary for something. We just don't know what it is yet. And even as something as simple as that is kind of harmful for evolutionists, because they've long been the junk DNA mega fans, saying, oh, it's just left over from previous creatures that we evolved from. It's like, this stuff clearly has some sort of purpose. We just are yet to figure out what it is, which is one of the really cool things about biology and just science in general that God gave us, is there's always more to discover.
There's always more to learn. There's a lot of reverse engineering still going on with that. And, you know, this was one of the items, junk DNA, that when Bob had his debate with Eugenie Scott back in the late 90s, it was one of the first times I saw Bob on air. He just slaughtered her in that debate.
And yeah, we talked about that in our last Creation Magazine episode, actually.
Yeah, and because one of her predictions was, well, you got this junk DNA, and Bob's like, well, wait a minute, there's a lot more we're going to learn about it, and we already are. And we've known for some time that mutations in this non-coding area cause problems, they cause diseases, and now they've found one that actually causes cancer. I know prior ones that they found caused different kinds of diseases. So if you have a mutation in an area that supposedly doesn't do anything, obviously it's doing something if a mutation causes you to have a disease. I mean, that's just common sense. They're finding out all kinds of things about the non-coding area. It actually can regulate how much of a gene is produced or how much of a protein is produced. It's like there's on and off switches involved in this area of the genome. There's splicing that goes on that is just beyond our imagination. How you can really, you can create all kinds of different genes just from different slicing out different parts of different sections of the DNA. So this whole idea that of it being junk, that's pretty much been refuted. You'll still get the occasional evolutionist who will try to cling to that argument, but anybody who's in the field of genetics or biology, they know that that's just not true. And it's embarrassing for them to even say it because there's so much evidence against it. So
yeah, it's really outdated at this point. It's just people make the argument they don't know their information like we all do.
Yeah. So it's going to be cool as we keep going forward to learn more about what's all going on with the DNA. It's so fascinating. I know for me personally, I love the topic being an engineer. And we've had to reverse engineer things before and just seeing the amazing complexity. So, Ryan, I think we have time for maybe one more article in the magazine.
Yeah. Talking about engineering, there's this one where they talk about bird nests and how well engineered they are. And that one's, it's pretty cool. The article talks about how birds' nests are basically engineering marvels. They're lightweight, they're flexible, they're cohesive, and they're just made with sticks by birds. There was a team of researchers that used laboratory experiments and computer simulations. So remember, this is a bird, and we're, you know, people. We just talked about how complex our brains are, and we have to use scientific experiments and, you know, computer simulations just to look at how the bird's nests are engineered. And they found that the distribution and friction of the contact points between different sticks are super crucial to bird nest design. And, you know, say bird brain, we talk about somebody who's, you know, a moron, but these birds are able to manufacture these engineering marvels, as the article says, in their nests.
Yeah. And I recall a show that we did on Creation Magazine. It might've been before you started helping with this show, Ryan, for going through Creation Magazine. I remember Bob and I went through one where it talked about the crow is probably the most intelligent animal other than humans. You know, we think it's chimps or dolphins. My late sister thought it was horses. We'd always have that debate between horses and dogs. But when you got right down to actual IQ, the crow scored the best. You know, so this whole euphemism of a bird brain, it's really not correct. Or you eat like a bird, that's another one. Well, birds eat a lot more than we do per their percentage of their body weight. Anyways, Ryan, we are actually out of time. I want to remind the audience that this is Telethon month. And Ryan, how much are we trying to raise?
30K, 30 large.
All right. So you guys, please help us out. Again, go to rsr.org. You'll see a big fat banner up there about the Telethon. Click on that and you'll go to a page that gives you all kinds of options of ways to help us out. We've got great materials in the store. You can sponsor a show. So many ways you can help. We don't have a mega church behind us. You know, we're in a studio, and I'm looking at my producer. Do we have a mega church? Yeah, we just don't have that mega church. So we need your help to stay on the air. And we got so many exciting shows coming up. We've got a show on plasma cosmology. I've been looking forward to that. We kind of set that show up when we talked about how the speed of light is, has it really been constant? Are the universal constants really constant? That was meant to set up a show, but we weren't able to get to it because we wanted to interview Barry Setterfield, but he's had health issues. Well, we have a special guest coming on. I believe we're going to do that show next week, and it's going to be on plasma cosmology. Be sure to tune in for that. So again, rsr.org, and click on the Telethon. Ryan, I want to thank you again for sitting in for Doug McBurney, and you're always welcome back to go through the Creation Magazine, the next one that comes out.
Yeah, looking forward to the next one.
We'll do that. We'll definitely go through that, the latest article. We might even revisit some that we didn't have time to get to here. There's so much great material.
Yeah, there were a couple really cool ones in here that we just couldn't get to, so check them out on creation.com. They're definitely worth a read.
Yeah, and just subscribe to that magazine, too, because it's really cool to have on your coffee table and people come over. It's just a great resource. Ryan, thanks again for joining us. For Doug McBurney, this is Fred Williams of Real Science Radio. May God bless you.
Hey, and this is Dominic, and you're tagging on to the end of the show. Quick note about the Telethon. If you guys want to help by giving a one-time donation, now is the time to do it. There is currently a $500 matching donation on the table. So if you want to help give and get us up to that $500 to match the donation, $120 has been matched. And so right now is a great time to give. Your donation amount will be doubled, or you can purchase a product, sign up for a subscription, whatever it is, that goes such a long way. Hey, may God bless you guys.